How do John's famous words, "the Word became flesh," help us understand John's gospel? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for February is the Concordia Commentary on John 1:1 through 7:1. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or check it out at issuesetc.org. This new commentary covers the first six chapters of John. The Concordia Commentary on John by Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Bill Weinrich.
We had a little thing yesterday. The Pope was great. He made a beautiful statement this morning. They had him convinced that illegal immigration is like a wonderful thing.
It's gotten harder than ever to instill the values they teach in our church instead of the values they always try to ram down our throat in popular culture.
We are gathered here because of one man, a man loved by many, scorned by others. That man, of course, is Jesus of Nazareth.
The solution, that our salvation, requires God to become a man and die on our place on the cross. And brokenness just does not cut it for the picture of the depth of our own sin.
Moms in Ohio love Issues Etc.
Mom!
It's a life-changing experience, isn't it? That's usually how it turns out to be. Here is the kid who's he's been within the womb of his home, his community, his family, his school. He graduates from high school, big expectations both for himself. He's a little scared. His parents are terrified. They send him off on the most expensive vacation for 4 years to a four-year university far away from home, separated from friends, everything that he knew before. He comes back after a semester, and he seems a little more serious about life. He comes back after the second semester, maybe for summer vacation, and a lot of what he believed when he left has somehow been shaken out of him when he comes back. How does that happen? How does life in the college culture change the way our children and our grandchildren think? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Tuesday afternoon, the 23rd of February. Our biweekly series on pop culture with Pastor Jonathan Fisk. We'll talk about college culture a little bit later. Pastor Tom Baker joins us to teach a Sunday school lesson on Jesus calling Philip and Nathaniel in John chapter 1. You can join us over the course of the next hour with your questions or your comments. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc. Our beloved on-demand listeners, whenever, wherever you listen, the Issues Etc. comment line is for you, 618-223-8382. Pastor Jonathan Fisk joins us for our series every other week on pop culture today, college culture. He's pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, creative director of Worldview Everlasting TV, and author of the book Broken, Seven Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. Jonathan, welcome back.
Hey, good to be back.
How do you respond to somebody who says, look, this has always been the way it is, at least in America, as long as we've been sending our kids off to college? They go there, they're meant to explore and experiment and question everything that they've been taught up to this point. So what we're going to describe here today, you call brainwashing, is really nothing new.
Yeah, I would say a number of different things to that. Times have changed would be one, and that may seem radical and revolutionary, but I think everyone knows it because everyone's complaining about it all the time, and we like to complain about the state of 20-year-olds and their inability to grow up, but then we never want to look at maybe where the cause could be for that. So that's one thing. On the other side of it, you have this idea that we're supposed to send them off to explore and even maybe sow their wild oats, as they used to say. Nowhere is this a Christian idea, that we want to teach our children by sending them into the lion's den and seeing if they survive. Something I've heard said to me enough times, and initially I would always kind of listen to it and be like, yeah, it's probably true, is this idea that you can't protect your children. And it struck me just a couple weeks ago when it was said to me again, wait a minute, that's my job. That's what being a father is protecting your children. Now, I think what they're getting at is that there is a coddling danger that a child is never exposed to a false teaching, so he doesn't know it when he sees it and he succumbs to it. So certainly we want our children to know false teaching when they see it, but I'm not convinced you do that by throwing the infant into the deep end of the swimming pool and saying, well, good luck, son, see you in 4 years. It seems a little ridiculous to me there. And then the other side of this is that our culture has gone through a radical philosophical change in the last 150 years from modernism to postmodernism, and one of the defining differences between these two realities is a belief in absolute truth versus a belief that there is not absolute truth. So that even the very idea of the word university, the school we're sending all these kids to, is a unified veritas, a singular truth, that there is knowledge that can be known, and we are here to pursue it, usually by the scientific method, although in the Middle Ages, of course, the queen of sciences was theology. But now, I think it's hypocritical to say we send anyone to a university. We're sending people to multiversities, to the place where we are going to tell them that there is no truth whatsoever, that truth is a matter of your experience and of your defining your own purpose and meaning in life. Of course, that's its own kind of truth, but no one wants to admit that, that the nihilism, the unbelief behind everything, or the belief in nothing behind everything is its own kind of belief. But if you can't recognize that shift in our culture, if you don't see it, then I would submit to you that you're probably part of it. If you're not aware of how much people don't believe anything anymore, then you've already drunk the poison. You drunk the Kool-Aid. And so at this point now, for Christians, it's not that we don't want to have our kids have higher education. By all means, we need to have our kids prepared to be the leading citizens of a society in which there are going to be very few citizens in the next 40 years that have the virtue needed to keep a society afloat. We want to have our children becoming doctors and lawyers, politicians, engineers, and all the other those are all the big ones we aim for because they have money attached to them, but all the various vocations that our Lord has given us. We want to be educated and prepared for that. But if you think that just sending your kid off to the local school, whatever it is, whatever state university or liberal arts college you have, is going to do that and not at this time in our history also attempt to deconstruct their faith and do this very intentionally and replace their faith in God with faith in the government, faith in politics, faith in socialism, you're just fooling yourself. And so, yeah, you can tell me, Pastor Fisk, it's all the same. I would beg to differ, and I would point to what's going on in the culture around us, that today's 25-year-old is not the 25-year-old of the 50s, and even the hippies of the 60s, I think were pretty tame compared to the licentious, narcissistic world that we're making for the next generation.
Is part of the problem also that, okay, let's talk about kind of the 1940s, 50s, when people had the kind of income to actually send their kids, to think about sending their kids to college when they themselves didn't even go to college or university. So a kid graduates from high school, and they send him off to university. Could part of the problem be that in that era, even though there were a lot of the, postmodernism was working its way into academia at the time, the kid himself might have been a little more grown up at 18 than they are today.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sitting here nodding my head as you talk. I don't think there's any question about that. And this is, in part, a revolution in educational theory that's only about 100 years old, and this has to do with progressive education versus classical. And there's still, I think, a lot of good Christians who haven't thought this one through, but we shifted how we believe people learn. And in so doing, we have basically said that, again, kids will be kids, so let them be. Whereas there was a wisdom before that kids are kids, and that means they're immature and they don't know much, and so it's our task to mature them and give them knowledge. And the removal of that and sort of the pampering of the child with self-esteem as kind of the highest virtue has led to 18-year-olds, 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds that are still very much children emotionally and even intellectually. Certainly when it comes to wisdom and virtue and the kind of things it takes to navigate a sinful, fallen world while holding fast to your faith in God. I would also say, you know, there's Christian Smith coined this term, moralistic therapeutic deism. And I would say that, you know, before the 60s at least, the emphasis, that was there. It was there in American culture, but the emphasis was on the moralistic deism. There was this God who demanded virtue, and the Ten Commandments showed that to us. And so we really did kind of expect that the young man would, or and woman, would be dutiful. And now the emphasis is on the therapy. It's on the positive feeling as a result of it, so that the morals have shifted to be whatever makes your therapy happy, whatever makes your emotions happy, and the deism has shifted into pantheism, really, of whatever God makes you happy. So all of this is, again, and we've talked about this now for months, it's a big perfect storm. It is the collapse of a civilization that's lasted, you know, 1,700 years, and we're in the middle of it. What is fascinating, scary, is how little we seem to be bothered by it. We're almost a little too much the fish in the water, and rather than noticing that there's poison in the water, we're just swimming right along, happy as if it's all part of the same deal. And so, yeah, my grandparents wanted to send my parents to college so that they could help the family get off the reliance on the farmstead, and that was one thing, and they were going to a school that's purpose was to teach truth and to educate them to be citizens giving in vocation to society. But that's not what college is anymore. When I was sent off to college, and my parents, I think, had various motives for it, but I don't think this came from them. I think this came from the high school system I was in. I went off to college because I wanted to have money. That was the biggest thing in my mind. I go to college, you have a better job. That better job equals more money. Why wouldn't I do this? And I think that's pretty standard fare for your average high school kid, that a college is now an assumption, because if you don't go to college, you're not going to be wealthy enough. And that alone should cause Christians to just kind of go, whoa, whoa, hold your horses here. We're the religion that says those who want to be rich fall into a trap and pierce themselves with many pangs. We're the religion that says it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than a rich man to enter heaven. If the pursuit of money and a higher lifestyle is the primary driving factor in us sending our kids off to college, especially when we know, and it can be just attested to now by plenty of evidence, that it is the intention of many universities to deconstruct our kids' worldview and replace it with their own, which is not Christian. We are fools among fools, to be pitied more than just about anybody else, willfully selling our heritage for a pot of porridge.
We'll take a break here. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Pastor Jonathan Fisk. It's our series with him every other week where we talk about pop culture today, college culture. I wonder, kind of picking up right on the other side of that break, whether or not with those parents of that bygone generation, so much was expected of them, certainly not to go off to college. They were supposed to be adults when they finished their schooling. My grandfather was expected to be more or less an adult after he graduated the eighth grade. And now I imagine that college is filled with people who are mentally still eighth graders in a lot of ways, and some of them are actually teaching in the classrooms. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break and the role of the sexual revolution in all of this. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is pastor of St. John Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, and creative director of Worldview Everlasting TV. For the life of me, I cannot believe we'd ever die for these sins. We won't merely flash me.
We don't look to the Anne Voss camps and the Beth Moores of the world for what it means to be a Christian woman.
Adrian Dorheinz talking about her presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
We look first to Jesus, and his word tells us that a godly woman is marked by things like repentance and piety, humility and grace. And ultimately, this kind of woman lives a really full life in faith. She has Christ's name on her, she receives all the blessings he has to give, and she rejoices in those. That's what the life of a baptized woman looks like, and that's who the Lord has created us as his daughters to be.
You can meet and hear Adrian Dorheinz, Making the Case for Biblical Womanhood, Friday, June 10th and Saturday, June 11th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 10th and 11th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Spiritual and religious. You're listening to Issues Etc.
some reaction and analysis after the death of Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia. Hadley Arkus of Amherst College.
He would find something good in people at odds with him, and he helped to create this aura of civility that built enormous respect for him, even among people on the other side.
Former U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese.
In terms of his integrity, he felt compelled to write as the law was, not as he wished it to be. And in that sense, he was observing the best qualities of our democratic republic.
Dr. Robert George of Princeton University.
The court has lost its most determined and outspoken defender of constitutional originalism, its most outspoken defender of the idea of constitutional fidelity.
And Terry Mattingly of Get Religion.
We currently have a 5-4 division in the Supreme Court on everything that Scalia himself said is connected to the court having assumed a super legislative role in American life.
Your comprehensive source for news, information, and truth, issues, etc. Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about pop culture, college culture. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is our guest. You think a little scary to hear some of these things about college culture. I know that it must be. There's a great organization that's helping connect your college-age child, grandchild, with solid, confessionally Lutheran pastors, congregations, and resources. It's called LCMSU. You can find them on the web, lcms.org/lcmsu. lcms.org/lcmsu. Jonathan, one of the things that came to mind when you were talking before the break is that the expectations that the parents had of themselves and then of their children also, that first generation that was able to send their kid off to college did so probably, as you said, they wanted to see the American dream achieved for their kid. Do a little better educationally, go a little farther educationally than mom and dad and grandparents were able to do. And then you contrasted that with, from your own experience, not so much doing better than your parents did, but just the pursuit of, well, I was going to say a career, but really money, and the career is only a means to that end. Do you think that that also makes these kids vulnerable when they get there? Because the doorkeepers are their professors and that institution.
Yeah, they're vulnerable in that they, I think many of them are going, like you said before, as they're still children. They're not adults, and they're not expected to be adults. And then they are suddenly in this place where they are being treated like they're intellectual, where much of education maybe has been talking down to them up to this point and not expecting them to excel. Now they're going to be challenged to think, and yet this challenge is very much going to be from a one-directional philosophy. And if nothing else, it's a practical atheism. Even if it's not an intentional atheism, the entire world of their education is going to be treated as if there is no design nor creation. To get through that, they're going to jump through any hoops they have to, believing that this is what Americans do, and this is the way to that American dream of the ever elusive success. As you were saying, the question there too, you said a former generation would have gone off with their parents expecting them to kind of forward the family in some way.
Yeah.
Even if it's about money, you're going to be bettering the family line. I don't think that's what people send their kids to school for the other day. I think they send them to have fun. That is the primary reason you send your kid off is for them to have a good time. So you said at the start, it's like this radically expensive vacation. Right. It used to be you'd go off and you'd live in a cubicle with a roommate, a 10-by-5-foot space, bathroom down the hallway. You'd suffer your way through it. I think my dad picked up bowling pins and reset them up back before they had machines for doing that. And you work your way through it. And now cruises kind of don't have much on a lot of college campuses. And then you come out of this thing with a degree and well, who knows what? In some things, you're prepared for life, but a lot of times you're kind of blue collar workers far more prepared in their trade schools to go get a job than your average college graduate is. You got hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt, and you've abandoned your faith. At what point is a Christian going to look at this and say, yeah, maybe there's a better way to this whole thing? Don't hear me calling that for a complete rejection of all American higher ed. I think it's a conversation worth having to be discerning about this stuff. But like you mentioned LCMSU, I continually am telling people, you need to pick your college based on having a church within walking distance of your dorm, or you're not going. And you go without church for 4 years, and good luck, my friend. I love you. My Christian child, who I have confirmed, I will pray for you, but I don't expect well. The Lord's given us the third commandment for a reason, and if you're going to intentionally go off and just not have the Word of God in your life for 4 years while submitting yourself to the most powerful, transformative system that there is short of mass media, what a dangerous thing to do. For my family, we've tried to talk about this. We've only got an 11-year-old, our oldest, but we've already talked about we're not so sure they're going away. Not only is it not cost efficient, but if they can do college while living in the house, they'll retain a support system. They'll retain a church-going attendance that we can continue to encourage them and can basically make them do as they go. And then they'll have a place to ask questions and not be just thrown into the dorm life. We haven't even talked about the sexual revolution and what that has done to the dorm life on campus. But it's an orgy fest. If you expect your kid to go off to college and live in the dorms and come back a virgin, you're silly. Don't put food in front of your dog and not expect him to eat it. Our kids are at the peak of their fertility, and you shove them into the madness. They start binge drinking, it's a Bacchus-driven hedonistic riot, and it's very much on purpose. It's very much why they go. Animal House, we used to watch that and laugh, but that was, talk about the things that drove me to college. I thought Animal House was what college would be, and I wanted it. I was disappointed it wasn't enough. But that was, man, for me, that's 15, 20 years ago now. It's continued to catalyze and grow. Can I say it enough? I mean, am I being too radical in challenging us to think about this? It's dangerous. It's straight up dangerous.
So I want to talk about that because it's been fully incorporated into the life of the university, the average state university, in an odd way. They're going to say from the administration standpoint, look, the kids are going to be doing this. We got to find some way of protecting them and in some way regulating this. So they have all kinds of codes of conduct that in themselves codify the expectation that you go there to kind of maximize your sexual prowess in whatever way you possibly can. And it has the implicit approval, if not, well, explicit approval of the college culture. Talk about that.
Yeah, I remember, I don't know if this was my experience or where this was, but I know I got one of these and my wife got one of these. We got these little welcome packets, little buckets that had all sorts of stuff in it. I remember hearing a few years ago that there now are condoms in that just regularly. They just give you condoms the first week of school. Here you go. Welcome to college, right? I know that there are dorms now that are no longer segregating the sexes, even living in sort of like with a unified common area between the two, about 10 rooms or so, and you might have boys and girls on half sides, but you're basically one door over from the opposite sex. It is wide open and stated that this is part of the life here, the hookup culture, and to use the word culture again, where relationship with the opposite sex is a matter of pleasure alone and fulfillment of desire, using each other as tools for the moment. And that for the moment is the heart of the postmodern mind and beat, that there is no reality but now. And so in the now, I shall experience and transcend to all that I possibly can and whatever it takes to be that. So on the one hand, you have the gladiators of the sports industry, the sports field, where the college is driven by this, and I'm a fan of college sports, I mean, don't get me wrong, but they're driven by this as institutions, where the glory of a young man is given everything for what? Something that will pass. And if he has a degree at the end, good, but some of them don't. And on the other end, you have, again, the reliance on alcohol and sex on the weekends or more often than that. We haven't even talked about the drug culture that's become so common. Why do you think we're now legalizing marijuana in so many states? Because a whole generation went off to school and learned to smoke it. And so now they're becoming voters, and they're influencing that. And we could talk about this forever. I am not an expert in it. I haven't been in school for a long time. But I know it is something that has continued to change. And it is certainly not a place where you're going to find a great deal of conservative Christian thought, even many universities that claim to be Christian universities. I know our own Concordia system is better than some, although I can tell you that I'll leave the particular institution unnamed, but it was at a Concordia that I first learned that Paul didn't write 2 Thessalonians. It was at a Concordia that I first had drugs given to me in a dormitory. And so it's not like they're entirely safe either. They're trying, I know that. But man, this is how powerful it is as a nation that it's trickling into even those universities that want to stand apart and want to teach the truth. And so it is a real threat. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, you used a phrase here earlier in our conversation, a perfect storm, because coupled with all of this, coming back to something you mentioned earlier, coupled with all of this is the nihilistic, and it's not just a philosophy, undergirds or fails to undergird every subject that's being taught. How would you describe it in layman's terms and its results in college culture?
Yeah. So nihilism is the belief in nothing, right? And this is the underneath thing about everything in Western culture right now. But in layman's terms, it means that there is no meaning behind what we teach. Even math would end up being sort of arbitrary, accidental, as it were. And Darwinian evolution plays into this a bit, but it is more about an anti-God or a rejection and running from God reality. So when you're going into your English class now, rather than being taught the classics, which would sort of promote the virtuous man. Even the Greeks believed that there was this virtue that could be attained to, this perfection, this Platonic realm. Now, instead, you're being taught very little more than overthrowing whatever oppression exists in your life, finding the safe space or creating the safe space, if you have to use violence to do so where you can then believe what you want to believe and fulfill your own experience. Every classroom will be tied to this one way or the other. The more you get into the hard sciences, the tougher it is, but then that line between chemistry and biology is a little bit blurry these days. And again, math can be a place where at least there may not be meaning, but at least there's structure and design. But even there, it's hard to escape the mindset of the entire anti-university or multiversity, which is trying to drive home the point that there is no meaning in life. You are your own God. Do what you will do for your own sake. Pay us $40,000 a year to do it here in a very lush environment. I don't know. I'm just not willing to foot the bill for that. You know, I'm not willing to pay $40,000 a year to have my kid's mind stolen from him or her. And so at the very least, I'm going to be incredibly picky about where they're going to go to school. And like I said before, even more picky, the most important thing is that they're going to have a faithful congregation nearby within walking distance, so that it's not a matter of getting up and driving anywhere. They have no excuse not to go. On campus is the best you can possibly find.
Sharon is listening on her cell. Sharon, thanks for being patient.
Hi. You know what? I'm a mother of four children. My youngest is heading into pharmacy school. I saw this big time with my second child coming home. I was just shocked. I just really was blindsided by it. I went to university. My husband did too. Never was questioned my faith. I think we need to be speaking more loudly. I mean, I'm worried now about my grandchildren. My kids are already all almost, except for the youngest, are through college. And I saw this, and even though we picked universities where there were churches on campus, you can't force them to go. And if they had been home, I can call them up and say, hey, meet us at church or whatever. I just think this is so crucial because we're losing a generation after generation. And it's kind of like the frog, the proverbial frog in the water. You don't realize it until it's too late sometimes.
Sharon, that's thank you comment. Very much. Thanks, Sharon. What do you say, Jonathan?
Yes, very well said, you know, and again, yeah, having them at home, I mean, I'd be like, I'm picking you up, and I'm taking you out for lunch afterwards, so, you know, I'll tickle your flesh a little bit that way, but there's no way that I'm not going to let you know that the most important thing in my mind is not your education from the world, but your catechism from the church, and to speak about this as a Christian culture or subculture is important because we're not, and there's a lot of knee-jerk reaction against it. There's a lot of guilt carried, frankly, with it. As we watch this continued change in America, we got two options. We can just get blown away by the storm, or we can rally the troops, circle the wagons, and that doesn't mean don't engage. That means engage a little more intentionally and stop just being swept along like the flotsam. There's a book by Gene Veith called Loving God with All Your Mind. He wrote it many years ago. It's fantastic. I've always wanted to do a study on it with all my graduating seniors. I've never been able to get to that, but it's very good for helping prepare to think about engaging the world you're going to find in a postmodern college setting. So I do recommend that to people. And yeah, we gotta talk loud about it and don't feel guilty not buying the bill of goods, especially as it gets to, I mean, you don't need to mortgage your house to send your kids off to school. There are other options for educating your kids, and the college experience just may not be worth it.
Folks, you can find out more about Jonathan Fisk and Worldview Everlasting TV at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is pastor of St. John's Lutheran Church in Oaks, North Dakota, creative director of Worldview Everlasting TV, and author of the book Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break as Often as Possible. Jonathan, thanks for being our guest.
Absolutely.
On the subject of Christianity and culture, we are going to begin a weekly series tomorrow on the November elections with Washington, D.C. journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway, a regular series with them every Wednesday on the November elections and other subjects as well. When we come back, Pastor Tom Baker will join us. We're going to be teaching a Sunday school lesson. In John chapter 1, Jesus calls Philip and Nathaniel. The first guy seems pretty easy. The second one is a more difficult nut to crack. We'll talk about that right after this. You've enjoyed our Looking Forward to Sunday Morning interviews with Pastor David Peterson. Did you know that there's a book with more than 60 of his Lent and Easter sermons, including daily readings for all of Lent? It's called Thy Kingdom Come. Find out more and purchase it online at emmanuelpress.us. Make Thy Kingdom Come part of your devotional life during the Lenten and Easter seasons. emmanuelpress.us. Thy Kingdom Come by Pastor David Peterson.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
At Zion Lutheran Church, Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin, we've adopted the motto, a changeless Christ for a changing world. While many congregations try to market a message that appeals to what a changing world wants, we continue to give a constantly changing world what it needs, a changeless Christ in word and sacraments like the church has done for 2,000 years. If you're in Chippewa Falls and would like to have the forgiveness of sins, eternal life, and salvation that Jesus won on the cross and delivers today in His church, please join us poor, miserable sinners. For more information, visit cfzionlutheran.com.
The 27th Annual Congress on the Lutheran Confessions, sponsored by the ACL and Luther Academy, is April 6th through the 8th in Bloomington, Minnesota. The Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission will present two seminars. On Tuesday, April 5th, Pastor Rob Jarvis offers an overview of the Reformation and our confessions. On Wednesday, April 6th, Pastor Jeremiah Johnson presents Catechesis Begins in the Home, Practical Ways to Pass on the Faith to Our Children. Learn more at theclcc.org.
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
We Lutherans were never aided by following along with some other tradition's theological priorities and catchphrases.
Issues, Etc. regular guest, Pastor Heath Curtis, Coordinator for Stewardship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on a Lutheran approach to stewardship.
Other folks are not approaching it from our good, solid Lutheran understanding of law and gospel and vocation. There's a place to talk about this in Christianity, and we have a way of talking about stewardship as Lutherans without ever using the word stewardship, if you like. I'm going to talk to you today about your vocation in your home, in your church, in your society, and how each one of these makes a claim on you, on your presence, on your support, on your prayers. That's how we should talk about this as Lutherans.
You'll find several stewardship resources at lcms.org/stewardship, lcms.org/stewardship.